If you are visiting with us, thank you so much for being here. Like Tim said, we are thrilled to have you, and we've got some returning ones from our community, and we're so glad that you've come back to join us and hope you'll continue worshiping with us as we strive to be God's people here. A few of you know that I've had kind of an exciting weekend. I went back to Lubbock Christian for homecoming this weekend. And in the midst of that, we met a lot of our old friends. And that's always a good thing. You know, when you see those people you knew, I'm getting old. When you see those people you knew 30 years ago, that always kind of brings things into a different perspective. On the way home, on the drive home, it was relatively quiet in the car. I think Nikki was working and Fran was taking a little bit of a nap. And so I was preaching through my sermon without any notes and got to being distracted about who I was then and maybe even before then. And I was just reminded of one of the most important events in my life happened right before I went to college. I've told some of these stories before, but you know, when I was in high school, my parents were extremely poor. In fact, my mom was basically a secretary at a brand new startup and made next to nothing. My dad worked for the government, and back 35 years ago, when you worked for the government, you didn't make anything either. And so my parents moved from place to place, and I had to switch schools way more times. And that, when you switch schools a bunch, that leads to awkwardness. And to say I was an awkward kid would have been a little bit of an understatement. And so here was this awkward kid who now is part of a new youth group. And in the youth group, you've got this kid who is 6'3" and is one of the best baseball players in the state. And then you've got this other kid who's a short little musician. And every time he starts playing the piano, the girls just gather around the piano and watch him sing and just kind of swoon, kind of like they do for old Jimmy. Scooter and guitar, he can do it both. And then you had me. And I was this awkward kid that was a little bit good at everything, but was, you know, 130, none of you remember me as 130 pounds, but I was 130 pounds and 30 of it was nose. And just felt out of place. And I remember we had a guy who wasn't the youth minister. He was our version of Thomas Beard. He was the one who taught the teenagers. And his name was Dr. Hurley. And he was a pediatrician who loved teenagers. And he says, we're going to study the book of Judges. And so we start studying the book of Judges. And we get to the story of Gideon. And I'm going to be honest, of all the stories in the Old Testament, the one that hit me the hardest as a 17-year-old kid was the story of Gideon. In fact, I don't want to say that this is the story that caused me to be a minister, but I think this is the story that started to change my tune a little bit. Because what happens in the life of Gideon, I think, is one of the more important stories that we gloss over. Because there's great stories all through the book of Judges. You get Samson. You know, you get the big strong guy, you get the athlete and the whooper of Philistines, and you've got his story, and his story's fun, and you've got Deborah's story, and Deborah's story is this great climactic moment of where the men won't do a thing, and this woman comes in and takes charge and delivers Israel, and Israel would not be where they are if not for Deborah standing up for what she and God believed in. And you get stories that are weird, like Jephthah and the vow and the kid, and we don't know what to do with that story. But in the midst of Judges is Gideon's story. And Gideon's story is one of those truths of Scripture that I think we need to be reminded of. Because when God looks at us, He doesn't always see what we can be right this second. But I think He sees what we can be in the future. And that doesn't mean that we're useless right now, but I think what it does mean is that God sees beyond our imperfections and beyond our flaws and beyond our inadequacies and beyond those moments when we think, what do we have to offer this world? And He says, there's so much more in store for you. And maybe this is a story teenagers need to hear because they're growing up and they're finding themselves and they're finding their faith. But my guess is this is a story all of us need to hear. A story about how God is in the business of taking people who think they are weak and insignificant and maybe don't matter and transforming them by His presence. And that's powerful. And that's exactly what happens in the midst of Gideon's story. Okay, so we're going to do things a little bit differently. You know, usually I have a certain format I kind of like to follow, and you guys are used to that. We're going to read a little and preach a little and kind of talk a little bit through the story of Judges chapter 6. So let's just begin with kind of why they're in this situation. So the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. For 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites and the Amalekites, and some of your translations will list some other ites. They've summarized it a little bit, and other eastern people, so more ites, would invade their country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza, and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep, nor cattle, nor donkeys. They came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count them or their camels. They invaded the land to ravage it. Midian so impoverished the Israelites that they cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said this, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. I rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians, and I delivered you from the hand of all your oppressors. I drove them out before you and gave you their land. I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you live. But you," then a haunting line we have given his parents, "you did not listen." Okay, so we kind of get this little prologue to Gideon's story. And what's interesting is, unfortunately, it's the story of Israel to a greater degree. And my guess is there are moments when it's the story of the church. But Israel is kind of in this cycle. So Israel will do good for a little bit, and then they'll get distracted, and they'll start following other gods, or at least thinking other gods might be decent, and then they'll go through some hardship and some time, and bad guys will come, and before you know it, they're in a desperate situation, and they're crying out to God. That's the cycle of not only the book of Judges, but unfortunately the cycle of the Old Testament. And so now we get this kind of big enemy is the Midianites. Now the Midianites at this day and age are the most famous people for one thing. They have got an army of camels. So we got a picture of their army of camels here. Anybody ever seen an army of camels? Okay, I'm guessing that living in where we live in the Southwest, we don't exactly see a whole lot of camels. If you lived in the area of Palestine, the camel was the best way to get from A to B. And it was the best way to get there fast because camels could go for days and days. And not only were they great at getting from A to B, they liked to destroy everything on their way. Okay, so think for a second. If you are the general of an invading army, you've got a horse that's got little hooves that just eats a few things, or you got a camel who's bigger and stronger and who just makes a mess of everything and eats all the way to the ground like a goat does. You don't want a camel. And so the Midianites have said, forget horses, we're going to ride on camels because camels are bigger and they're more destructive and they can do more damage. And not only that, we can ride on this and we can beat up all the Israelites or whoever we want to get on our way. And so this big bad nation of the Midians and their camel army comes, and for 7 years they seasonally invade. Think about that. Now not many of us grow up in a farming world, but you've got seasonal stuff. Now, what they would do is every time the crops were about to be harvested, they would come running through, and those camels would tear up everything. Now, imagine what 7 years of seasonal invasion does to your economy. Okay, we went through, 18, 24 months of COVID economy that just crushed the nation's economy, right? I mean, it shut down things. It kind of shut the whole world down, and it's taken a whole lot to get the world's economy going back and clicking because of a year and a half and 2 years of COVID. Think what happens when 7 years hits you. And so for 7 years now, Israel is dealing with these invasions, and they're now poor, and they're desperate, and they're hiding. And God doesn't send a judge yet. Okay, I find it interesting that before God ever sends Gideon, God sends a prophet. And the prophet, his name is never told, but Israel needs repentance more than they need relief. See, the prophet is going to demand repentance. The judge is going to bring relief. And God is looking at Israel saying, I'm going to condemn you first before I comfort you. I'm going to judge you first before I encourage you. And do we need to hear the same message? Do we at sometimes need God to look down at us and say, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what's a mess in your life. And here's why you're in this seasonal time of chaos. And take a hard look at stuff. I think that's part of what we're trying to do in our Vision 2030, is we're trying to take a hard look at ourselves, and not that we need condemnation, and not that we need a prophet to come in and rail against us, but maybe we need to take an honest look at who we are and at what we're doing. And in the case of Israel, who they are and what they're doing is they're following every god but the real one. Okay, so at least we've got them beat. I think we're following the right God, and we're reading the right book, but they're doing neither of those things. And so God sends the prophet to give a lecture. And the prophet comes in and he gives a lecture. And then after the lecture, there is going to need to be someone who can come deliver the goods, so to speak. And the one who's going to deliver the goods is this fellow named Gideon. So let's keep reading the story. The angel of the Lord, let's talk about him for a second. He makes a couple of appearances. We'll talk about one in chapter 2 here in a few minutes. But he makes a number of appearances through the Old Testament. The angel of the Lord is this descriptive term of, maybe if he's the leader of the angels, he's something bigger and stronger and better than the majority of the angels. And how you want to define that, you can ask me a theory on it later. I'm not going to give you a theory in a sermon, but you've got the angel of the Lord here. So the angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak at Ophrah that belonged to Joash the you read his name however you want to, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat. Okay, now watch where he's working. Where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in the wine press to keep it from the Midianites. Okay, look, most of us don't thresh wheat, and most of us don't make wine in a wine press. Okay, when you threshed wheat, you went to the top of the hill to thresh wheat so all the junk that was worthless would fly off in the wind. And you made wine in the valley in the lowest spot where you'd get a little runoff from the water that could help make the wine as you were stomping the grapes. Where's Gideon threshing wheat? He's hiding. I mean, we had that line before the prophet comes. They're hiding in the caves and they're hiding in the low spots and they're doing everything they can to hide from the enemy because not only do they not want their land destroyed, but they don't want to be the one in the way of the army of the camels. And Midian's doing the exact same thing. So Gideon is down threshing wheat in the wine press. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said this, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Okay, let's stop there for a second. My guess is if we were witnessing Gideon, the last phrase that would come out of our mouth would be mighty warrior. It'd probably be more like, you poor guy, you scavenger, you're doing the very best you can to find what you can. You got nothing and you're afraid and you're hiding. And usually we would see this exactly for what we see it. But the angel of the Lord doesn't. And then I love what Gideon says. Pardon me. The Hebrew, it says, excuse me. There's probably a better way. It's almost like Gideon saying, what? And that's not in Hebrew, but that's what I think it means. But if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian. Okay, if we were just to stop and pause for a second, there's an interesting thing that I think we need to unpack in the midst of this story, is that Gideon is saying, I am busted, I am broken, I am beaten down, I'm taking what little wheat is left in a field and I've brought it down to the lowest spot, and with a stick I'm trying to get enough flour to feed a family. And you come saying, hey, mighty warrior. And you come with all of these stories of how you've delivered us. And the judges could all tell the stories of Moses. And they could all tell the stories of the plagues. They're not that far removed from that. They're 100 years removed from the story of Exodus. And in the midst of that, they're saying, here's the stories we know, but you're not doing any of that stuff. And Gideon probably sounds a little whiny, kind of like I did just now. He's defeated. He's discouraged. and he's full of doubts and fears. And then we pick up the story. The Lord turned to him and said, if you got your real Bible out, you should circle this. Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Okay, the NIV has done a bad job translating that. It's, am I not with you? Go in the strength you have. So it's God looking at poor scared little Gideon who's coming from a poor family, and we're going to learn later on in the story, not only is Gideon from a poor family that's struggling just to make ends meet, but Gideon is the bottom rung of that poor family in the first place. And so here in the midst of all of that, God is going to say, you go in the strength you have because I am with you. And again, Gideon says, what? Pardon me, Lord. But how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. And the Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. Now that's a conversation. That's a conversation between a guy who needs some help. Because what he's doing is he's taking a survey of all that's going around him. And when he takes an honest look at all that's going around him, all he sees is junk and bad stuff and himself as completely inadequate for the task. Okay, let's stop there for a second and apply it to a 21st century world. You ever feel the same way? You ever watch the news and say, how's the church going to fix this? Okay, I get up some Monday mornings and I look at our church and I think we're a pretty good church with pretty strong people and some awfully good things going on in it, and I feel inadequate for the task. And there are moments when I walk out the door and I go to have coffee with people who are unbelievers, or I go into a situation in public and I look around and I see it and I say, I don't know how we're going to do this, and maybe I need to be reminded of this story that says, go in the strength you have because I am with you. That in the midst of our inadequacies, or at least the feelings of it, in the midst of those moments when we feel defeated and discouraged, and all we've got is fear and doubt, in the midst of all of those moments, more than anything, we need to hear from God, go in the strength you have because I'm with you. But do we believe that? See, Gideon, I'm not sure, believes it right away. In fact, he's going to ask a few questions here in a little bit, and then a story we're not going to read. He's going to ask for even more proof toward the end of that chapter. But Gideon doesn't at first realize this man was an angel, but he's an angel of the Lord. Okay, now the angel of the Lord appeared earlier, so let's go back a few chapters to chapter 2, and we get this section in Judges chapter 2. The angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim. I think I'm saying that right. If I didn't, pretend. He said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land that I swore to give your ancestors. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet you have disobeyed me. Why have you done this? And I also said, I will not drive them out before you. They will become traps for you, and their gods will become snares for you. When the angel of the Lord had spoken these things to all the Israelites, the people wept aloud, and they called that place Bochim, and there they offered sacrifices to the Lord. Okay, what's interesting is this is now the second appearance of the angel of the Lord to the people of Israel. And both times he said, here's what you've done. You've known the story. You've known of God's deliverance, and you've known of God's power, and you've probably known of your parents and forefathers' failings as they walked through the wilderness for 40 years. You know all of those stories, and you know what he said. He said, go into this land and get the gods out, and you've left them. Okay, let's take a little moment to chase a rabbit. If there are things that keep tripping us up, we need to get them out. See, that's what happens to Israel, is they've got stuff in their life they're not willing to kick out. And the minute they're not willing to kick it out is the minute it keeps catching them on the heel. Okay, back to our story. Israel, worshiping the wrong gods. They're worshiping Baal, and they're worshiping Asherah, and they're worshiping this god that'll take care of crops, and they're worshiping this god that'll fight for them, and they're worshiping this god that'll keep them alive and awake and give them lots of kids, and they're worshiping all these foreign things. And what God is saying is, I've got all of them beat. Didn't I prove that? and yet you keep falling. And Gideon comes on the scene inadequate and awkward. Seems like God has done this before. A couple hundred years before this story, there's going to be a guy named Abraham who seems to live in a household full of idol worshipers, and he grabs his wife and he moves away. And then he gets old. And all he's got is his wife and a few servants and her concubine. And as he gets old, he starts to think, why did God call me out to this place? Why has God said it's going to be through my child the world will be blessed? How is it going to work? And he's got these moments. And I know Abraham is one of our great heroes of faith. But when you read that story honestly, there are moments he is just as desperate as Gideon is. Or go a couple thousand years later the other direction. And you're going to get a guy named Peter. And Peter's going to be this moment that, of brashness, and this moment when he will say something great and smart and intelligent. And then there's going to be five moments that seem to follow it that are ridiculously, almost absurd. And he's going to start standing before a group of people in a couple more years after some of those embarrassing stories. And he's going to say stuff like this: we're not scholars and we're not smart. We're just ordinary people like you. But here's the story of Jesus. And it changes a world. God can do it through the Abrahams and through the Peters and through the Gideons. If God can see beyond flaws and failings, can he do the same for us? See, I think what God does is God sees our possibilities. Now if you've been parents, you live this, right? I mean, you look at your kids, and when your kid is three and has got cookies smeared all over his face and has tried to help you bake cookies, and so there is flour and there is sugar and there is everything all over your kitchen, you think not, what a mess, I wish I never had this kid. You think, this is the next champion of the English Baking Channel, right? I mean, we see the possibilities. We see that goofy little kid who's driving us nuts might turn into be whatever it is, and we fill in all the blanks. We do that as parents, and I think God does that as God. Is he looks down at whether it's Abraham or Peter, or whether it's Gideon in our story, and he sees the discouragement, and he sees the inadequacy, and he sees all of the problems that are there, and he says, in spite of all of that, we're going to do something great. Okay, I remember teaching this in VBS. It was 7 or 8 years ago, and I had a little girl in class whose line when we were doing the Gideon story was, God was a whole lot more exciting then. You know, that may be a little bit of a point. He certainly interacted differently, but God takes a messed up fella and he says, go in the strength you have, for I will be with you. Okay, let's go back to that line. Go in the strength you have. Okay, I don't think God is saying, you go do this in all your might and all your majesty and all the stuff that you got, because you got it going on. Because Gideon doesn't have it going on. He says, you go in what you have, and I, okay, maybe I'm interpreting this wrong, but you go as who you are and what you have with your inadequacies and all your troubles and all your baggage, but know you're going to be successful because it's not about you, it's about me. Because I will be with you. See, if we only look at our strengths and base it only on who we are always going to lose. Every single time. Because to be frankly honest, we're not that much. I mean, I know there are moments we think we're all of that in a bag of chips, but if we really, you've never heard that phrase, have you? If we really took an honest look at ourselves, we would realize that we're pretty inadequate. But yet the call to go in the strength you have, for I am with you, is still the call. Here's what Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. He says, not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God. Okay, now this is Paul. This isn't some schmo. This is the guy who's one of the smartest guys of his generation, who's been through an elite school and had an elite teacher. He's going to the Harvard and Yale of his day, and he's coming out of that, and he's looking at a group of people, and he's saying, it's not about me. but it's about the one who comes through me, whose competence comes through me. Because our weaknesses never hinder God. Okay, what's interesting is I think one of the things that makes Gideon's story so important is his weaknesses actually turn out to be his strength. And sometimes that's what happens to us. Our weaknesses turn out to be our strength. Okay, let's go back a little bit to my childhood. When I was in junior high, we were so poor that I got 2 pieces of bread and 1 miniature piece of bologna. And that was it. No mayonnaise, because mayonnaise cost too much. And the bread was usually 2-day-old bread from the Wonder Store. You guys may not know what a Wonder Store is, but a Wonder Store is where they get rid of all the old bread. So they go to the grocery store with the fresh bread, and a few days later they take the old bread from there. And we bought the old bread from the old bread from the old bread at the Wonder Store. And then my mom would buy the cheapest, and I love you, Mom, because you're probably watching. She'd buy the cheapest bologna you could find, and she'd slap that bologna on the sandwich, and she'd say, go to school and have a nice lunch. And I was dying for some Cheetos. But in the midst of that, I needed to learn about weaknesses. I needed to learn maybe some valuable lessons about what it means when you got next to nothing, but you do the best of what you got. That in the midst of those moments when you think you have nothing, God still gives you more than you can imagine. And that those weaknesses do not hinder God. Another story that I find interesting is in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It's one of those passages that we kind of teach fairly often. It's that thorn in the flesh thing. And Paul's going to say, I was given this thorn in the flesh by Satan to buffet me, and I asked the Lord 3 times to remove it, and 3 times the Lord has said no. And then we pick this up. But God said to this, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Okay, go back. Go in the strength you have, was Judges 6. And Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians 12, my grace is more than enough, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And then Paul's going to say, therefore I'll boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insult, in hardship, in persecution, in difficulty. For when I am weak, then I am strong. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. See, Gideon needed to know that God's promises of strength and God's promises of abiding with him and going with him were not just figments of his imagination, but they were real and they were genuine, and God was going to deliver. See, Gideon, when you keep reading the rest of that story, Gideon is going to realize that there's something special about that man. If you were to keep reading that story, you would see that the angel of the Lord, he finally kind of reveals himself, at least to some extent, to Gideon. And Gideon does this. He takes an entire goat and 35 pounds of flour. So that's how much an epa of flour is, to bake bread for this angel of the Lord. And not only does he take the goat, and not only does he take 35 pounds of flour, which my guess is might be all that they have that he's been threshing in that wine press. But then he makes soup on top of that, the text says. And he's aware, finally, that there is something in the midst of this story that is divine, and even Gideon can't hide from that. And so Gideon is going to build an altar. And so as Gideon builds this altar, he does what Jews do. And when you build an altar, or when you build a town, you name it something significant. And as he builds that altar, he's going to say, God is peace. So the name of the altar that he's going to sacrifice stuff on is God is peace. And I think what Gideon is doing is as he builds this altar and as he talks about how God is going to be the one who brings the peace, that he's taken his relationship public. And he's saying, okay, I may be the least in my family, and my family may be the lowest on the scale in Manasseh, but you know what? Here is what God has said. And God started off by saying, oh, warrior, let's go in the strength you have because I'm going to be with you. And he's going to say, let's do it. And then the next couple stories that come out of Gideon's life are exactly what we expect, God delivering Israel by the hands of the Midianites. Even if he was weak, and even if he had moments when he doubted, and even when he was this faltering little human in a wine press, God still said, let's go. And God did great things through him. One last verse. 2 Corinthians chapter 3 reads like this in verse 18. And we who with unveiled faces, this is actually talking about Moses. If you read that whole end of that chapter. But and we with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory. Notice what it says. Are being transformed into his likeness with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. That's us. Just like Gideon was being transformed from a scaredy cat down in the wine press, we are being transformed. And as we are being transformed, and as we allow God to do that, when we start meeting God and then walking with him, he takes us and he starts turning us into his likeness with his confidence and his power. The church is never going to change the world when we hide in our caves. And the church is never going to change the world when we hide in our wine press. This is not a wine press, but this is a good place to hide. I come into this place and all of us like each other. And for the most part, all of us believe the same stuff. And nobody makes fun of me for being the preacher in this. Well, some of you make fun of me, but not because I'm the preacher. But nobody is calling me out, and no one is cussing me because I believe in Jesus in this room. But when I walk out there, things change. Tuesday, I was coming from a meeting, and maybe you've seen this car, and I'm not going to quote what I see on the car, but there is a white Honda Altima that has some pretty obnoxious stuff written on it. And he drives up and down Main Street. I see him all the time. I don't know if he's just decided this is his calling. And it is satanic, and it is evil, and it is ugly. And I pull up next to that car, and I think, this is the world we live in. This is what I got to preach to. How am I supposed to go out there? And I needed a Gideon moment that said, go in the strength you have, for I am with you. So I pulled up next to him, and I waved. I wished I had a honk if you love Jesus sticker. Maybe that would have helped. The world's a mess, folks. We know it. Let's go in the strength we have. It starts in this room where it's safe. It starts in this room where we come to know Jesus better through teaching and through worship and through encouragement and through fellowship and all those things. But the call is not to stop there. It's to go in the strength we have through the one who is with us out there, to impact a culture and bring God into that place. I think Gideon's story is pretty relevant in the 21st century church. At least it is to me. Maybe it is to you too. We're going to talk about some other characters the next few weeks. Carrie's doing Nehemiah, so we're going to work some around some of those characters involved in Nehemiah's role. And maybe we can figure out a few things about going in the strength we have. Okay, if you need something, we're going to stand and sing in a minute. Wayne's got a song that he's picked out to move us to think about other things. I'm going to be here at the front. Elders are all around the room. Got one of my favorite calls came the other night where Quentin calls about Mila, and now they're out of town, so I can tell this story. And Quentin says, Mila wants to be baptized right now, but I'm driving, and I'm going to get there as quick as I can. Can you meet us at the building? Because she's a mess, and in a mess in a great way, because she wants to be with Jesus. Maybe you're where Mila is, and your world's a little bit of a mess, and you finally found that the answer is Jesus. If you need to be baptized, we can do that too. But if you need us, let us know as we stand and sing. Wayne?